Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Today is a special show, Friday, April 10th, 2015. We're talking with Eric Asimov, wine critic of the New York Times. We'll be talking about baseball and lager with Eric, as well as some local brewers, including Patrick from Flagship in Staten Island. How you doing, Patrick?
Good, thank you.
And our new buddy, Travis Kaufman from Folks Beer.
How's it going?
And Carol Garth. We call you Folksy sometimes. Justin Phillips from Beer Table is our beer expert. And Eric Asimov, welcome to the show.
Pleased to be here.
You know, we always love reading your beer articles. Last summer you did a great one about simple sours from Peekskill. And do you have a lot of fun writing your beer articles?
I love it. First of all, I get to taste and drink a lot of beer, which is a great thing. And you know, I love beer. I think if I can remember back that far, the very first articles I ever wrote for the Times back in the 80s were about beer. And nobody was writing about beer then. So.
And now everybody is.
Yeah.
But your article was really great. It was a few weeks ago. You talked about lagers at baseball stadiums and you had a great panel of judges. You picked Full Session Lager from Oregon, the Session Lager from Oregon as your top pick.
Right.
So
right.
It was a lot of people were talking about it. You had Brooklyn Lager on that, and since then we've had a bunch of reps and brewers talk about what beers really would go best for a baseball game, in particular Yankee Stadium, because you left this hanging. You said Yankee Stadium needs a new shortstop and better beer.
Well, you know, it's I'm a Yankees fan for 40 years, and it's it really gnaws at me the poverty of the beer program there. I mean, there's so many wonderful beers, but you just leave it in the hands of the distributors who bring out the mass market beers, and that's the way it goes.
Well, we have some great guys our guests tonight. Again, Patrick from Flagship. And Travis from Folks Beer, Justin from Beer Table. So they all brought some beers that they thought you'd like to try, and we can talk about which of these beers would go well.
You know, I should say one thing. Yeah. I mean, the focus this year was on lager, but there's so many beers that could be great at a ball game. You know, if you want to take a particular type of lager, Pilsner, but you could have pale ales. If you want to get really esoteric and come up with lambics or sour beers, or the simple sour from Peekskill that I talked about last year, which was a hybrid and particularly appropriate because it's low in alcohol, unlike a lot of sour
beers.
That's
a great one. So, Pat, you brought a beer for us that you think would go well at baseball games. What is it?
This is Flagship's Lager, fairly new style we developed over the past few months. I guess you would call it a Vienna lager by style, but it also uses rye, adds a bit of a smooth texture. It uses like a Märzen yeast, like an Oktoberfest yeast, add a little bit of complexity to it. But with all that fancy talk, it really is just kind of a golden lager at the end of the day. It uses, noble hops like Saaz and Hallertau, a little more than your average German lager, but it still has a very smooth and refreshing flavor, I think. On a hot day, or just a nice baseball day, you know, you could certainly drink a few of these.
Eric, when you guys do your tasting panels in the Times, I mean, you're usually tasting wine.
Right.
How is tasting wine different from tasting beer?
Well, for one thing, I always invite a few guests, and often usually for the wine panels, I've got sommeliers, and the wine culture is pretty clear. You sip a little bit, you spit it out. You don't want to get wasted.
Yeah, we don't spit.
Beer people do not spit, and it's always funny to see on a beer panel when I bring in people who are more familiar and schooled in beer and. You know, they're drinking it down. I'm still spitting because I'm, kind of a weak wine guy. But Yeah. And, it, you know, the vocabulary is very different. The production is very different. The references are different. Everything is different except the sort of analysis that you're going. I mean, you can still see if flavors are clear, focused, if they're fresh or if they're a little bit stale. You know, it's... There are a lot of differences, but at the end of the day, you're still looking for top quality.
You know, I know one thing that's probably tough about picking beer when you're doing a tasting is often people will go to a store and buy from a store. Is that how you guys do it usually?
We're buying from any kind of retail establishment. And, you know, it's not like in the old days where you're only buying from grocery stores where it's sitting out on the shelves for days. Now you have a lot of specialty beer retail shops that take good care of the beer.
Well, that's great. I really appreciate that you did that article. And Justin from Beer Table, tell us about some of the beers you brought because we're talking about lagers for baseball. Let's get into that a little more.
Yeah. So I just brought a few examples of lagers that we enjoy selling that we think are of great quality, all kind of slightly different styles, ranging from, I think, one of our best regional classics, the Prima Pils from Victory. Beautiful beer. A fairly new one for us from Vancouver, the Steamworks Pils, which is selling great for us. It's kind of far afield, but great beer. Back to New York, the Southampton Keller Pils, which is an unfiltered sort of older style that I like because it's a little bit richer, breadier. Another interpretation of a Keller Pils, the Via Emilia from Del Ducato in Italy. Really interesting small brewery over there that makes beautiful product. And then a very, very old brewery, Echschlenkerla from Bamberg in Germany. Their Helles, which is not smoked, but because the brewery specializes in rock beer, has a good deal of smoke to it.
Well, that's a great lineup. Pat, let's talk more about your beer because I really liked it. I would like some more if you don't mind giving me some. I'm feeling a little anxious because we have Eric Asmar from the Times here. I have to say that.
Why anxious?
Well, you know, we're honored to have you. And, you know, talking about baseball, it's one of my favorite pastimes as well. Isn't it funny, Pat, did you say you guys are also serving your beer at the Yankees Staten Island stadium?
Yeah, actually, we have our summer beer, seasonal. We've only been open a little under a year, but it came out just in time last year for the baseball season. The single-A team, Staten Island Yankees, so we did our summer ale. We called it Pastime. It's a pretty basic foundation of a summer wheat beer, but we use some exotic hops, this one hop called Summer, which is an Australian hop. And then this year, we actually decided to get a little more experimental with it and do some dry hopping. And so we kind of made this commitment with all the different kinds of exciting hops, fruity, citrusy, earthy, spicy, that they just seem to come out with new varieties and, you know, new, you know, crossbreds and all these things, all these great, exciting hops. So we're going to do a different dry hop every year. This year we did a specific hop called Falconer's Flight 7 Seas and Galaxy, but not overdone, just sort of an aromatic thing to try and get it. But anyways, yeah, our partnership with the Staten Island Yankees has been good, and we're going to continue it this year. A little bit of cross-marketing, but at the end of the day, it's really just beer on tap at the baseball stadium, which goes well.
I have to say I love this beer. I think you should persuade the Yankees to bring it up to the big leagues right
yes,
away.
You got to start in single A and then make your way up. So that's what we're working on.
How nice is this beer? It's a little bit of malt to it, but really nice bitterness, and it integrates very well. Purely, totally refreshing.
Thank you.
Victory. And we're going to try the Victory, too. Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of fun talking about, you know, how can you get better beers into the Yankee Stadium? That's one of the things that your article left me with. And people have said that the Mets actually have better beers at Citi Field.
No, it's true. You know, I don't know exactly which brands that they have there, but they do have some craft beers there, unlike Yankee Stadium. And you guys who know more about the beer distribution business than I do can explain better why that is.
Why do you think so, Justin?
Why the beer selection?
They have better beers at Citi Field than Yankee Stadium.
Oh, man, I don't know. And honestly, I haven't yet ventured to either one, so I'm not the guy to ask.
But maybe they should have some things like this Victory Prima Pils.
Right? I would hope so, yeah. I mean, this is really one
when,
of my favorites.
When we were putting the show together, the process was we read the article and we emailed with you, Eric. And then I started thinking, who's making really good lagers? And my first people I asked were Pennsylvania brewers, and in particular Bill Kovaleski at Victory, because he's kind of been a German-style lager specialist for a long time, and he couldn't make it on the show. But thanks for your feedback, Bill. They did send over some Victories. And then we kind of went local. We asked Garrett Oliver. He's busy, but he's always busy because he's traveling so much. And we ended up really kind of what we do often on the show is our new small local breweries, which is kind of what's keeping us interested in the beer scene. And we've got Travis from Folks Beer and Pat from Flagship. So I feel like we kind of came up with what we're supposed to be doing in beer, and one of those things is super local and super fresh. But we got the Victory Prima Pils right now, which has been a kind of a standard for a while for craft beer guys. And Travis, tell us about your Helles, because you're making German style beers as well, and I think that the root of these lagers are German, inspirations.
Yeah, definitely. And the Helles lager that I make is a very pretty traditional Helles. I do use some American hops, but other than that, the grain bill and the techniques are German in origin. And this is an early kegging of my Helles Simple, which is, like I said, kind of a hybrid between German and American styles. It is a early kegging, so it's you get to see this beer basically as a Keller beer, or as we call it at the brewery affectionately, Helles Keller. But this beer is just at the end of its fermentation. It's gone through its diacetyl rest, and we sometimes keg it early to taste it and enjoy it as a Keller beer. So this is what that is. And
this is what I like, and I feel like in the old days, if we mix like kind of old traditional German breweries with American baseball, this is what we'd be drinking. Maybe in the old days too. I bet in the late 1800s in Milwaukee and New York, where they had great breweries, you were probably getting super fresh beer like this when you went to a ballpark, when you went out to a pub. And I think that's one thing we're trying to get to is what is really good beer. I think it's stuff like this. It's super local, super fresh. And this is probably the kind of beer they were drinking in Milwaukee and Boston in the late 1800s. Don't
definitely.
You think
so? Well, in the ball fields, the culture was German, and basically it was the German beer garden culture brought into the context of baseball. Especially in the early part of baseball.
And of course, a lot of the owners of ball teams in the early days were brewers.
Yeah, exactly.
And the stadium.
And so there was a lot of cross feeding and the whiskey and beer league, and there was a lot of historical context for using baseball as marketing for beer, and then also using beer as sort of economic tool to propagate baseball as well.
I like this beer. What do you think about this beer, Justin?
Different. Definitely has a really distinct, interesting kind of vegetal thing aromatically. Nice. Delicate body, hazy, soft.
Yeah, Travis, it's like a very it's like a green grassy nose. Mm-hmm. What is that from, Travis? Is that just because it's so fresh?
That's the noble hops, Hallertau and Saaz way in the background, and also just the fermentation process. We do a really low temp mash, so it brings out more of the grassy notes in the hops, and you get less of the caramelization and residual sugars that the yeast can't digest.
Maybe we could push Yankee Stadium to do one local beer night. That would be fun.
Yeah, how will this beer evolve with more cellaring?
Not much. I mean, the flavor is pretty much there. It's going to clear out significantly in a week, and it'll be pretty much be ready to sell. It has a lot of green hop flavor lupulin in there that will mellow a little bit, so it'll be a little rounder. The malt will come forward a little bit, and it'll be clear.
So I have a question for you brewers. One of the beers that was in our lager tasting was something called an India Pale Lager. So they took a traditional lager style and just added a boatload of American hops to it. And a beer like that, I can see it would be very popular. It's not something that I would want to drink personally. But how do you balance the need to make classic genres of beer with your own desire to maybe add your personal twist.
Pat, why don't you go first?
Well, everything's evolved, in especially America and American craft beer, towards the hops, because we have the hops here. You know, it's like, what, 75% of the commercially grown hops are now in America, and then they're great and they're fresh. And so all these IPAs came out, and now people want to do lagers, people want to do Belgian style IPAs and add hops to them. But I mean, really, the trick is you're not trying to balance them. You're trying to unbalance them. You want them to be more hoppy. You want that to take over.
Well, it's not a question of balancing the beer, but just balancing your own the impulse
right.
to want to make your personal mark on a genre rather than staying true to a classic tradition.
Yeah, I mean, and that's how you know, you can either make something really good traditional, or you can make it, or it doesn't, you know, it's a little boring maybe sometimes, and you want to try something different. There's so many different hops, and you have your go-to ones, the ones you like a lot, and you're like, oh, I wonder how this would taste in a lager, and then you try it, and it's either good or it's not, and if it's good, you go with it.
That's a great start to the show, guys. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Good start, guys.
You're listening to Kill Me in the Summertime by Dead Stars.
L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show with Eric Asma of the New York Times. We're talking about lagers for baseball, and we've got great panel here, Pat from Flagship on Staten Island, Volksbier, our favorite brewery in Carroll Gardens, and Justin from Beer Table. So just a quick note, I'm on my second beer today, so my tongue's untied. It's a special live show. We're usually Tuesdays at 5. This is a special show on Friday. And I would like to give a shout-out to my neighborhood, East Village. We are recovering from the gas explosion and fire. And our favorite place is the Bermuda Triangle, Jimmy's number 43, Burp Castle and Standings Bar, where I hope to watch the Yankees and Red Sox tonight. We hope to be open tonight. We're still waiting for a final inspection. But just for our listeners out there, just know that we're hoping to be open soon. But, again, talking about baseball, I do like watching baseball at Standings Bar on East 7th Street, my neighbor. And it's what I like about it is it's an intimate bar with a nice owner, but there's always five or six games. You can see like a San Francisco game, a Philly game. But the Yankees-Red Sox game is always one of my favorites. And what do you think about baseball this year, Eric? I mean, I know you're a big fan.
Well, you know, it's a new era for us Yankee fans. You know, we've got the last vestiges of the dynasty are gone, and you know, it's I'm all for rebuilding, and I'm all for being patient about it. So I'm, you know, the one thing I fear is when they start throwing money after aging superstars on their way down, and that's been the Yankee way.
Well, hopefully we'll be back in standings tonight on East 7th Street. We can watch the Red Sox and the Yankees, both really new teams, and we can also drink good beer there. One thing I love about standings is they always have a good lineup of craft beer. So, Eric, you asked an interesting question of the Brewers, and Travis is going to answer with his perspective from Folks Beer.
Well, as far as ingredients are concerned, and especially hop integration, you know, we're all subject to what's available to us, and as we're historically brewers, you know, coming to America as German immigrants or whenever, and you know, there's a lot of options open to us, and I try to think about, you know, lager specifically when I make the Helles as an idea. You know, Helles came out of this idea that the masses needed this bright, clean beer to fill this void, and they had leisure time for the first time, and the working man needed this beer to be refreshing and easy and sip. And I try to channel that and use, you know, some of the same ingredients, the two row malts from Bohemia, and then integrate some American hops as well. And it is tricky because they're very potent, and you have to, you know, be judicious with them and be kind of like very gentle with the way you extract them to get that level of balance. Also, my beers, you know, attenuate all the way, so they're very dry, and you know, you don't have a lot of residual sugar to lean a bunch of hops up against. So, you know, I try to get the essence and the aromatics without getting a lot of the bitterness, because, you know, without a lot of residual sugar, you can't afford to have all that extra bitterness in your beer.
Well, I like the beer, and I like the way you integrate the American hops. It then becomes part of the chorus and part of the background rather than dominating, as is so often the case.
Justin, what do you think about this beer? Do you carry any Folks beer at beer table?
Not yet. My understanding, only in Brooklyn so far. So
he's had beer at Jimmy's Number 43. It comes out every couple of weeks.
Perfect.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And all right, so let's raise a glass of toast to this one. We're getting there. We had the flagship, and now we've had the Folks beer, and I think the local beers are winning. We also tasted the Victory, which has a great line. I'll put in the plug for Victory Braumeister Pils. I don't know if we have samples of that today, but that's always a step above, and it's like a single hop series. And again, if you're in Pennsylvania or the Northeast, I think that Victory is consistently making some of the best lagers, since we're talking about lagers. But Justin, you've also been collaborating on some beers as well that could go well in a baseball stadium. Why don't you tell us about that project, because you've made some interesting beers.
So just to clarify, not collaborations, these are commissions, asking brewers to brew the beer that they would want to drink every day. So think, you know, daily, and that may or may not mean low alcohol. In most cases, it has meant that. But it's kind of an interesting series. this one's from Chad from Crooked Stave out in Denver.
So what's it's called Table Beer, Beer Table, Table Beer?
Yeah, it's just sort of a play on our name and just the idea of an everyday drink, whether or not that's a fancy drink or not. Not so important to me. I'm just asking them to be honest and brew something that they find delicious. Chad specializes in wild fermentations and Brettanomyces and things like this, so all of his beers are influenced by that, and you'll see that here.
Love the Crooked Stave, but that's kind of a style that Eric was saying, similar to the simple sour that Peak School makes. It's like a hybrid, right? It's like a little sour.
Yeah, you'll get a little acidity. It's not really a sour beer, but you know, it's light, it's clean, it's, you know, there's a little bit of funky, earthy, mushroomy stuff going on, but...
What were some of the other beer table beer commissions that you did? Because they're all similar. They're all like low alcohol.
So far they have been, but you know, I'm open to whatever. Brian Strumke from Stillwater did a beautiful one that he's rebrewed a few times. Westbrook, where our host brewery for the series, has done his own. Evil Twin. And more on the way.
I love this beer. You know, this would be a great ballpark beer. It's refreshing. It's tart. You can drink a gallon of it.
Yeah.
It's going to go with all the food they serve there. And it's something different, you know? It does remind me of that the simple sour, in that it is sort of a hybrid of styles done in a very... in a style that you can drink a lot of.
Yeah. There's a lot of these hybrid sours out there. I know, like, in Chicago, talking about a great baseball town, Off Color makes beer called Troublesome, where it's like wheat kind of hybrid with Goza, you know, and that's very refreshing. And I think the essence of a baseball beer is refreshing. I don't know. This is a good one. I should have more of this beer. Come on.
So, I mean, for me, refreshing bitterness is definitely a something that's important, but also a little bit of acidity.
What was the style of this beer again?
I don't think he has really.
Whatever it is, it reminds me of like a Berliner Weiss.
Yeah, it's kind of seems in that vein a little bit. It's not
which
lactic,
are perfect beers. You know, it's just they're light in alcohol. They have a little bit of tartness, but they dry up if you're sitting at a baseball stadium. I mean, it's. The more tart and sour stuff, I don't think have really made their way into the baseball stadium yet. But the way the craft beer world is changing, I think they'll be there soon enough. And this would be a great beer.
Cool.
I mean, I feel like in terms of like stadiums around the country, you know, there seems to be a higher level of food, or at least more variety of food at many stadiums. Do most baseball stadiums actually have a good lineup of beer?
I can't speak for most baseball stadiums, but I know if you go to the San Francisco Giants ballpark, you've got a really nice lineup. If you go to Wrigley Field, not so much.
Really? In Chicago?
I would guess that you have a great lineup at Camden Yards. You know, it's some of the newer stadiums have a more modern way of thinking about the kind of food that they're serving and the beers that are going to accompany it. I think some of the really traditional ballparks, Wrigley Field, I'm not sure about Fenway, Yankee Stadium, they've been doing things for a long time. They're not that willing to depart from what's been successful for them, and they've got, you know, mainstream relationships and don't really explore beyond that.
Well, it makes another reason for we were talking earlier about how much we'd like to listen to baseball on the radio or go into a bar like Standings. And, you know, I'm all for that. I think I'm going to pick my beer before I pick the baseball stadium. it's tough. I mean, I think your article left us with, I think one point of this is, hey, baseball just started this week, and maybe someone on the Yankees is listening. But, you know, maybe you could put, you know, one or two good lines on, or maybe even have a craft beer night. Because I think that there's so many people are interested in craft beer, and I think it would only make me paying that ticket to go to a baseball game, you know, more appealing to me. I don't know. Does anybody else here go to baseball besides Eric?
Well, you know, I might go to one or two games a year. I'm by no means a season tickets holder. But, you know, when I do go, I want a good beer.
I was just at spring training 2 weeks ago, and I went to the stadium, Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter, and the JetBlue Park in Fort Myers. And they both stadiums, I know Roger Dean's been around for a while. The JetBlue Park is a newer park they built for the Red Sox. But both of them had, like, craft beer sections, like a big tent just dedicated to craft beer. I'm seeing that more and more at major league parks. I think Boston has a small one. I know that the Mets have one. I guess the Yankees don't. But I'm sure that they might get there.
Maybe in the VIP section.
Well, you know, some of the places like at Citi Field, you know, a lot of the so-called craft beers that they have are really just the lines of the big brewers,
right,
that they've acquired. But I think they may sell Brooklyn at Citi Field.
Goose Island.
Well, there you go. Exactly.
But they're a great beer. So, I mean, you know, if that's your choice. Just because Anheuser-Busch owns it doesn't mean I'm not going to drink it. I'll drink it at a baseball stadium. So,
well, I think this brings up the point that even though craft beer is rising, I think still the average person is drinking not really a craft beer. And still, if you go to a lot of larger chain restaurants or pubs, you've got a selection of draft beer, but many of them are owned by an AB or someone else. And I think it's probably a similar what's going on in ballparks because it's like larger corporate entities, and we're really focused on the small guys. But,
well, you know, I think there are a lot of pressure tactics by distributors. They're bringing in the big names, and they either undercharge or do whatever else they can to force out the smaller distributors. It's just, you know, traditional capitalism.
Yeah, our friends at Pretty Things last year ran a little campaign in Boston because they were talking about certain bars were taking money from either brewers or distributors to buy their taps out. I've never seen that happen to me. I mean, I've had 10 years in the business here. I've never had anyone come and offer me money, but I have seen some shady things, and that's one, another thing we like about the small local craft beer guys. It's a straight transaction. I mean, Travis here will come, from Carroll Gardens with one or two kegs for me, and he gives us an invoice, and we will pay him, and we know he's doing a quality product. But it's also going back to the baseball. It's like, can you imagine a time when someone was drinking these fresh, super local beers at a baseball game, or like a slightly sour beer like Justin gave us, or flagship made in Staten Island at a Staten Island stadium. I feel like that's how I want our whole world to be, but I still feel even when I go to mainstream restaurants, I'm not getting it. So we're going to keep crusading for having our local breweries come out. And we've talked so much about every neighborhood could have a brewery. That's how I feel. But how do you feel, Travis?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I think that economics are definitely a big part of it. But I think that the desire for the public to have that beer, that idea of the lager, that, crisp, clean beer is a big driving force because it is, 50% of beer sales in the States right now are those beers, those mass-produced lagers. So, at a ball field, if you're going to have, tens of thousands of people together, it's also a numbers game. And, I think what craft brewers can do to fight that is to provide that beer, that crisp lager in a consistent and delicious way.
Right. Justin, after this, what's the next beer that we should try?
Oh, we can bounce around here. Let's go to the Southampton Keller Pils, just to go to a slightly different style, unfiltered. I think this is a beauty. It's a little, as mentioned, a little different.
And Pat, you at one time, you've worked a lot of breweries, right, Pat?
Right, yeah. I for upwards of a decade, I worked at Harpoon for a while, went to Eagle Rock in L.A., and then before I started up Flagship with Jay Sykes and Matt McGinley and John Gordon, I was working at Greenpoint Beer Works, which is a contract brewery in Brooklyn. They do Kelso and Heartland are kind of their house brands, but a lot of other local breweries will run out of capacity and ask us to brew their beers. And this was actually one of the beers that when I was there about 3 years ago, we were brewing it. And it's a great lager.
I'd be happy to have this at Yankee Stadium, too. It's all right. Hey, we're gonna take a short break again. We'll be back in a few minutes, and we'll talk more about some traditional German lagers on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
You're listening to Pale Blue, The Landing.
I'm Amy Mills from 17th Street Barbecue in Southern Illinois, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got a special show. It's Friday. We're talking about lagers and baseball. Eric Asimov of New York Times and Pat from Flagship. So, Pat, what were you saying about you think that we should... It's hard for craft brewers to make craft lagers.
Well, I just thought it was worth bringing up the challenge that small breweries have in making the decision to make a lager. I noticed with Travis's beer and the Keller Pils from Southampton, and also with, I know for a fact, with Flagship's beer, that these taste like lagers that have been properly lagered, which means essentially it takes at least 6 weeks to make the beer. A traditional ale can turn over in about 2 weeks at the earliest. So you're talking about cutting into one-third or two-thirds, I should say, of your total capacity for brewing. And when you're a small brewer, that's really hard to justify. But So if you're going to make a lager, that's a commitment you kind of have to sign up for, or you're going to be pushing out kind of a young product that might not have the same nuances and flavors that a traditional lager should get from its yeast profile and from its flavor profile.
I would add two things to that. If you think back historically to the origins of the craft beer movement, which really were a bunch of home brewers, and back in the bad old days of the 70s, the beers that they wanted to brew were the ales that had all but disappeared because big breweries had just focused on the one sort of mass market lager that everybody was making. So they were making pale ales and IPAs and porters and stouts and all the other genres of beer that were largely unavailable. The other point is that, as you said, lagers are take a lot more time to make, and they're also a lot more unforgiving. So small errors here or there are going to show up, and you could really blemish a whole batch in a way that, you know, ale is more forgiving. You can sort of hide little mistakes.
Right. With really hoppy beers, sometimes the hop flavor will take over, or like stouts and porters, you get that roasty character. And, you know, when it's just kind of a golden or yellow pilsner or a golden lager, it's supposed to be crisp. It's supposed to be dry. It's supposed to have that lager flavor. But it's not really supposed to have much of anything else going on. And to do it right, you really have to have that full attenuation and that full conditioning period that's what the yeast really picks up, are those flavors during that time period. And you really have to just sit on it. You just sit on it and wait. And we filter our beer, but after it ferments, we're waiting over a month before we can filter it. And it's a total of 6 to 7 weeks just to produce it, where our normal ales take 2 weeks.
I would add one more thing. Because lager was kind of the property of the big brewers, there was a tendency, I think, to sort of sneer at it. And because it is fairly simple, you know, that was another reason it didn't really invite creativity. But when well made, these beers are so beautiful and so refreshing, and they fulfill that basic requirement of beer to refresh and to invigorate.
Eric, you've written about pilsners in the past, and I know you wrote a great article about Kolsch a few years ago. Is Kolsch a lager?
No, Kolsch is an ale, isn't it?
I'm always confused. Justin, you know.
It's an ale that behaves a little bit like a lager.
Yeah, and I'm not the brewer here, but, I mean, Kolsch yeast is something that is somewhere in between. It's not particularly cold fermenting, and it's not really that warm fermenting either.
It's an ale that ferments at lager temperatures, just to sum it up, I guess would be how you'd say it, but yeah.
But a Kolsch would be a good beer for baseball.
I think it's a great beer for a baseball. And, you know, it's kind of the hidden beer of the restaurant industry. I mean, you know, if you talk to sommeliers or people who are working the floor every night, the first thing they want when they're done, when their shift is over, is a Kolsch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, there's some good Kolsches that we have, yeah. I like the Reisdorf Kolsch myself. There's so many good ones. And Travis, what's your take on this? I mean, making lagers, you're making a lager. I think Eric's right that I think the craft beer movement jumped on ales. But it also sounds like to make a good lager, it's like you need more money and capacity.
Yeah, it's about scaling. And the business for lagers is really based around producing large amounts of beer and being able to lager, you know, hundreds of barrels at a time. And it's amazing business at that point if you can do the fermentation right, because once you're in that lager process, you have a lot of beer to sell and you can keg it to order. So you can basically, you know, make beer seasonally, which the Germans do, and sell it off the fermenter and keg it as you need it. So it's sort of like banking beer, and it stays good. It's a very stable product. It can be shipped. So it's an amazing business thing, which is why Anheuser-Busch use it. I would say that, you know, part of the reason that Americans maybe have a little bit of a, you know, bad name for lagers is because, you know, the early brewers adopted, well, they didn't have the proper, you know, two-row malt, so they were dealing with six-row malt, and they adopted corn very early to produce the lighter-bodied beer. And I think that's part of what gave it a bad name.
Yeah, man. Pat, what's your take on that? I mean, I've heard that, too, that, like, corn and lager is not really so great. But yeah, some craft breweries are putting corn in beers too. For
sure, cream ales. I mean, there's ways to use it. I think what happens is when you use it as a flavor component to make a certain style of beer in the craft brewing world, that's okay to all of us. But what's not okay to people that really like craft beer, usually, from what I've taken, is that when you're using it as a way to save money or you use rice and you're just trying to replace traditional brewing ingredients with something that's cheaper that doesn't really have any flavor. Sometimes, you know, with some of the more macro brewed lagers, you get more of an astringency. For me, what it was like, when I tried some real German beer, I was like, oh my God, you know what I mean? Like, these lagers are not like what's around here. This is, and then it's hard to go back. And then now you have these craft breweries making them in America, like almost as good, but they're still, there's that benchmark in Germany that's really hard to get to. I mean, really hard.
And it has to do with the ingredients and the water exactly. available. Yeah, yeah. And terroir.
Try to make, you know, a lager in New York, like one that comes out of like an alpine village, you know, with that crystal clear water coming off the mountain. It's
what Travis
not easy.
Is doing.
Exactly.
Travis says he's inspired by an alpine Tyrolean.
That's
history.
Right. You know, that's my heritage, but also, you know, that I just try to channel those flavors and that whole region as inspiration because, you know, I've been pursuing this sort of, you know, light, refreshing, you know, beer, and that's why I make beer.
And then Justin brought in one of my favorite lagers, the yep. Schlenkerla Helles Lager.
Yeah, this is a special and unique Schlenkerla, and not that they aren't. But the first time I actually was here was probably 9-10 years ago, and Matthias Trum, the current owner of the brewery, was not interested in sending this beer to the States at the time because he saw this as their workers' beer. This is like their basic beer that didn't use any rauch malt, no smoke malt. Fortunately, he gave in and sent some to us. So.
So what is this? Is a basic lager that's made in a smoked beer facility?
Yeah, classic German Helles, just light beer, basically.
So it picks up a hint of smoke.
And it's
you,
one of the
you
few...
do get that. It's almost yeah. like a savory saline element to yeah. it.
Well, smoke's an interesting ingredient, especially in something like a lager, because you can use it instead of adding hops. You can also use the smoked essence. But this yeah. this is always I love that story because they're just running it in a smoked facility, so it picks up on it.
It's one of the That's few breweries in the world that does its own malting, and they do it over an open fire. So it's a really atmospheric and beautiful.
But
place.
You like it, Eric?
Very much.
It tastes like a beer that uses smoked malt, but they don't. That's amazing, you know.
No, that's a good one. On a side note, since we have listeners from England to California, Michigan, if you've got your favorite, you know, baseball team or football team, wherever you are, you can tweet us at @beer_sessions and let us know what the beer you'd want to drink when you're at your game in your local, you know, stadium. So that's kind of a cool thing. If I'm in New York City right now, I mean, we're tallying this. I said I've been a big fan of Victory for a long time. Flagship's winning me over. When I go to Staten Island, I'm going to drink Flagship. And I might just go to the Yankees minor league team just to try this beer.
That's a good enough reason to do it, right?
And if I'm going to Brooklyn, you guys need like some kind of Carroll Gardens baseball team because I want to go to your
Stick
brewery,
ball.
Yeah, and Cyclones. Just drink this. Well, also with you though, it's like I have to get it just like you said. What? It's just from the tank. It's this is where I want to drink my beers.
Yeah, as fresh as possible. And actually, you know, if you're in Bushwick tomorrow from 3 to 6, I'll be around the corner at Hops and Hawks tasting all three of my beers. If you're around,
that's great. You also have another beer that could be a baseball beer, the Blonde.
Yeah, I actually brought that, and you know, at its heart, it's one of those northern German ales that does go through a little cooler fermentation. And it's not a Kolsch by any means, but it is in the same vein. And I actually brought it if you want to
taste
it. So, again, this is an American and German hybrid. Those northern German ales that, you know, are ale yeast but fermented like lagers. And this one does see a little bit more American hops as well. This is the Morning Dew.
And again, it's got that real kind of fresh, hoppy, you know, nose. I love talking to Travis because the first time we had you on, so I didn't realize just how deep you were into the history of beer and German style beers.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's been a passion of mine for a long time. And, you know, I've been homebrewing for, you know, going on 20 years, not to age myself. But I, you know, it's been a pursuit of mine, and this idea of you know, freshness, Christmas, integration, and, you know, the German idea of mellowness in beer is really, really attractive to me. And I try to put that in all my beers.
So I have a beer history question for you. The Hell's style.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a German reaction to the popularity of Pilsner?
That's correct, yeah.
Because most German lagers were dark, right?
That's correct. I mean, the original lager was Bock beer from Einbeck, made in the caves up there, and that was a really sort of like dark, dank beer. But it did use lager yeast, and interestingly, that brewery was one of the first commercial breweries. It wasn't part of the church. It wasn't part of the monarchy. One of the first, you know, real commercial breweries. And then, you know, Vienna lager was next, and then Bohemian Pils was after that, and then, you know, Helles, the Munich Helles was a reaction to the Bohemian Pils and the desire to have that beer. But the whole thing was sort of a reaction to have, you know, this light, crisp beer as part of the Industrial Revolution. And it fit in economically, and it fit in taste-wise, and sort of fulfilled this need for bright, delicious beers.
I learned something today. So the Germans in New York were also making beer, and that's why we have these styles of beer that we like at baseball stadiums. It's crazy. Pat, Flagship, man. You guys came out of nowhere. It was like suddenly there was a brewery in Staten Island. And you're making great beers. What beer are you serving at the Yankee minor league stadium again?
It's our summer ale. It's called Pastime. And like I said before, it's like a summer wheat ale with a little more hops, some dry hops this year. And then we do it. We do like a little bit of cross promotion and marketing with the Staten Island Yankees. And, you know, we're right near the stadium, so the ferry, the Manhattan, or the Staten Island ferry, I should say, comes in from Manhattan, and the baseball stadium's right there. Flagship's an 8-minute walk, and you got the train system. We're at the first stop there in Tompkinsville. So
I might go there. If you're visiting New York, go to Staten Island, because I can't afford to go to Yankee Stadium anymore. So
yeah, I mean, it's easy to get a ticket, man, and, you know, the brewery's open before and after the game, so you can go take a 8-minute walk or a 1-minute train ride, and you're there. And we're on tap there, too.
Tompkinsville.
Yeah,
see, that was the classic baseball novel of my youth, The Kid from Tompkinsville by John R. Tunis.
There we go.
All right.
Mine was Casey at the Bat.
All right. Justin, are you a baseball fan?
You know, I like hitting baseballs, but I can't say I'm a baseball fan. I don't watch it or listen to it. I'm sorry.
So let's pick our last beer. So we're talking about lagers. What's the last beer, if you said, I'm throwing this in the panel, this is what I would like to drink at a baseball game, since you brought so many great ones?
Among everything we have here? Oh, man.
Yeah, let's pop one last beer before we sign on.
I mean, we should go with historical classic, right? Let's go straight to
Einbeck. Tell us about that. Travis was talking about Einbecker. Yep. And why don't you tell us more about Einbecker? Because that's been one of those classics I've had for many years, the Bock, the Pils.
Sure, yeah. Einbecker, you know, sort of the original lager. They started producing lagers first in the caves of Einbeck. They had the cool temperatures naturally in the caves. This is, we're going to taste the Pilsner. Back then it would have been their Bock, and they still produce several different styles of Bock beers now that are amazing, a little richer, darker for sure. And then this is their reaction, again, to the Bohemian Pilsner movement.
I'm definitely interested in, you know, guessing listeners from around the country and from England, if you're going to a football stadium, what beers that you're being served.
I will say that I love the focus on German styles today, but I will also speak up for English styles. You know, if you have a good cask condition English bitter, I mean, wouldn't that be great at a ball game? Not that you'd ever get it there.
And
you'd
that's
have to
what
go to the bar, but
also that's what inspired this style of beer. You know, the British were making these bright, delicious, clean drinking beers, and that's, you know, where Bohemian Pilsner came from. Vienna Pilsner are all from that same idea.
I think we'd like it at the game, but still the common person, because the cask ales are served at room temp on a hot day, they're going to be like, well, it's not cold enough. You know, that's the problem.
We're not worried about the common person, Pat.
Yeah. No, I'm not. No, I'm saying.
And you got the coolest shirt, too. Flagship, you got like a logo. It's is that a new thing? All the breweries, you have to wear your name on your shirt. And
But, you know, my boss, Jay Sykes, gave this to me right before we opened, and I ended up, you know, it's a Dickies Workman shirt, and you put the flagship logo on it, and that's about it.
Well, we're going to wrap the show pants. Up. Erica, last question for our brewers. Anything you want to ask or say before we close out?
Well, I would just say keep up the good work, keep up the experimentation, and, you know, I'm all about bringing great beer to the people. You know, the thirsty masses need to know what they really want.
And what do the Yankees need this year?
Oh, man, I think they need a whole lot of help. They need somebody to hit.
Well, it was a great show. And, Eric, again, thanks for inspiring us, your article about lagers and baseball. And hopefully we can keep this conversation going. I know the Mets are doing it at Citi Field. And also with food, our good buddy Tracy Neprant from Myriad Restaurant Group at Tribeca Grill, he's really proud to be serving food out at Citi Field. And shout out to you, Tracy, because he's another great baseball fan on the Mets side, which is, again, stop by standings tonight. Hopefully will be reopened after the East Village fire. And it's a great place to watch the Yankees and the Red Sox. So in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Eric, Travis, Justin, and Pat for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy. And to our engineer today, Ajeep, filling in for Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.